Welcome to PCMC, Pop Culture Man Children. Yeah. Don't let the man in the title fool you. This is not a toxic. This is not a toxic space. This is a loving space.
Yeah, no toxicity here.
This is a fandom space. I am here today with my good friend, Mr. Vin Forte.
What's going on, everybody? We're going to talk some Star Trek again.
You fucking bet we are. You might know Vin from his various projects.
Yeah, just go check them all out at my Linktree, linktree.com/Vin Forte.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it is. I should have remembered what it was,
but you know, find it. He has a podcast called Oddball.
Yeah, I got one called Wrestle Rap, WrassleRap, with DJ Emilio Sparks.
Does he still do the DJ?
No.
I remember when that was like his official moniker.
Yeah, I don't think he's actually DJed in like a long time.
Yeah, he used to be an actual like DJ, like at clubs and stuff too.
Yeah.
So this is...
Now we're getting into the Next Gen movies.
Yes, yes. I feel like after this episode, we'll take a break with this because I have to go and watch the Next Gen series.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back and do Next Gen episode and then we'll get into these movies.
Should we do season by season? Like after every two seasons view?
How many seasons are there?
There are 7 seasons.
We probably should do it that way then.
Okay.
Because we did all of the original series in one go, but that's a bit different. I mean, there's only 3 seasons of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we should, or maybe do 2. We'll figure it out. But we will eventually, I think, get through everything. And I know, by the way, I know some of you want us to do the last season of Gilmore Girls, and certainly Jen wants to do the last season of Gilmore Girls, because we did every season to the last. But the thing, Vin, is that the last season's so bad that we kind of stopped watching it.
Well, didn't they do one of those, and they might not have, but didn't they do one of those things where it's like it went to Netflix?
Oh, that was a whole nother bad season. The last season of the original run is bad.
Okay, so this is one of those things where like they almost shouldn't have brought it back. Where it's
because people didn't like diehard fans do not like the one where they brought it back.
But like, well, what's the reaction to the Netflix one then? Because
people don't like that.
Okay, because didn't they do something weird with that? Where
it's 4 movies.
It's 4 movies, and they each take place like during a different season.
Yeah, it's called a year. I think a year in the life or whatever. Yeah, people did not like that.
Don't do that. Like, if you're gonna do it, if you're gonna do the revival, you gotta just give the people what they want. Arrested Development made this mistake when they came back as well.
Yes.
Where it's like, hey, you remember how the whole crux of the show was the interaction between the family members?
Yeah.
Well, we're just gonna take that away. And every episode's gonna be about each individual family member.
Right, right. How do you, have you watched any of the new Frasier?
I watched the first episode.
So people saying that it's a similar thing because it's more of a spinoff than a revival because
it kind of is more of a spinoff.
It's a different place. Niles isn't in it.
But Niles' son is in it.
Now, why didn't David Hyde Pierce want to do it?
Because I think he just was like, no, this is going to suck and we already did this.
Did you see, spoiler alert for the Marvels, but did you see the post-credits of the Marvels?
With Beast.
Beast, you got fucking, he's back as Beast, but he looks
more MCU.
Well, he looks more like 90s cartoon.
Yeah.
It feels like the MCU version of the X-Men are really going to be like the 90s cartoon, which is weird.
Well, we'll see what they do with that, because the MCU's in a very precarious position right now.
Yeah.
Can't rely on Kang anymore.
No, that didn't work out. So, all right. So today we're talking about Star Trek Generations from 1994. This is the first film with the Next Gen cast. It actually began, I think they began filming this like 6 weeks after
the finale.
The finale. So like they literally just went right into this. But it begins with Kirk, and Kirk comes at the end. It sort of the thing that they sold it on.
They sold it as a passing of the torch because the studio, like classic studio chicanery, like they got cold feet.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're not 100% sold on the Next Gen guys getting their own movie. Even though this show has been a wild runaway success,
right.
We still feel we need to have like a passing the baton.
Right. And you did have on Next Gen, you had Scotty in an episode, you had Bones in the pilot. You had Spock a few times, right?
Yeah.
So I think that they saved it, or maybe Shatner refused to do it on TV. But this was like a bigger event. This was like, oh, you're going to have the two captains.
You're finally going to get Shatner mixed in with these guys.
Right.
Which like kind of happens and kind of doesn't. Like,
no, it kind of doesn't.
So the movie starts out with, honestly, a really good scene.
I think so.
Like, this is maybe one of the stronger openings of any Star Trek movie ever.
Yeah.
Like, basically, it's back in Kirk's day. It's him, Bones and Spock, because they were smart enough to be like, what? We're not coming back. We did this.
No, actually, Bones couldn't get the insurance. He was so sick.
Oh, that's right. But Spock definitely was like, we're not.
They wanted him to direct it, and he said no. He was like, no, I don't know who, this is not Spock.
So they got Scotty and Chekhov instead, and both of their lines were basically originally written for Spock and Bones.
Right, which proves how badly they were written then.
Right, they were so interchangeable.
Yeah. And George Takei was supposed to be on the new ship.
Yes.
But he didn't want to get fake demoted from his fake job. So, but it ended up working out because they add his daughter, which leads to the beginning of a theme of family and not living out your life for Starfleet. Yeah. Because he says to Chekhov, like, when did Sulu have time to start a family? Which ends up being a big theme in the movie.
Yeah. But then you have
Alan Ruck.
Yeah, Frasier's not Frasier.
Ferris Bueller's.
Ferris Bueller. Frasier Bueller's best friend Cameron.
Yeah, Alan Ruck,
who did nothing else after that.
I did stuff. Isn't he in?
He's in Succession.
He's in Succession. Yeah,
but
he was in the Exorcist TV series, which I loved.
But
prefer he's like to the new film.
Yeah, but he's like the new captain of the new Enterprise,
right? Because there's like 70 something years between, even though the show's called Next Generation, in fact, it wasn't the Next Generation. It was like 4 or 5 generations later.
Yeah. So Alan Ruck's the captain of the new Enterprise. And like, there's all these cameras there, and like the news reporters are like, because they're christening it. So it's like, oh, we're going to be here. We're going to take it on a test run.
The opening credits is really cool because you see space and you see the stars, but you see like a bottle of champagne like
floating
and then it hits the Enterprise, and it says Enterprise B.
Yeah.
And it's really, I think good CGI at the time. There's not bad CGI in this. And there's also good model work in this, too.
Yes, very good model work.
Yeah.
So Alan Ruck is the captain, and he's doing the whole, like, yeah, I'm the captain, we're going to do this.
He's very green.
He's very green. And then, like, an anomaly shows up when they're about to do this test run.
Yeah.
And Kirk is like, almost about to get out of his chair like every 2 minutes because he's like, I want to take control.
Well, you see, Alan Ruck is literally like,
he's literally like dumbass in the chair. What do I do?
He pulls a George W. Bush when he's told 9/11 happened. He's literally just like, you can see the wheels turning in his head.
Yeah. Like there's several moments where people are like, Sky's yelling out, well, what about the turbo thrusters or whatever? He's like, oh, we don't even have those set up yet. Like, what are you talking about?
It's meant to just be a publicity stunt. He says like, we'll just take a trip around the block. They don't have torpedoes. They don't have a doctor or a med bay. Yeah. They don't really have anything. So they're not prepared for anything. But they get a distress signal.
Yeah, because there's a separate ship in the way of this anomaly.
Yeah,
which we learn later is called the Nexus.
Yeah.
So Nexus is about to hit. They basically go on this rescue mission. It's a great little like 8 minute scene or whatever. Yeah. They rescue people. Guinan's there.
Yes.
For some reason.
Is she doesn't age, or she ages she slowly?
Doesn't age.
Oh, okay. She's uncredited in this movie.
Why? I don't know, but I do know that she loves that she got to be in Star Trek.
Didn't she ask to be in
Star Trek? She asked to be in it, and they were like, I think she got in like the middle of the second season or the third season, only because they couldn't believe that Whoopi Goldberg was asking to be in Star Trek for like the first 2 years.
Yeah.
Because they were like, Whoopi Goldberg's on the line. Whoopi Goldberg just won an Oscar. What does she want to be in this for? But no, she loved it. So
some fun trivia.
Yeah.
What's the other franchise that she asked to be in?
Oh, God.
Ninja Turtles.
Oh, wow.
When they made that Michael Bay Ninja Turtles, she was like, I love Ninja Turtles. Put me in Ninja Turtles. So like, sure. So she plays April O'Neil's editor in the first Ninja Turtles movie. And if there were lines written, she didn't read them because she's just
doing Whoopi stuff.
She's just, yeah, and she says the word Ninja Turtles like five times. She's like, what about these Ninja Turtles? don't be talking to me about some Ninja Turtles. It's insane. It's insane.
She's in it. They get the people off the ship, but at a price, because as the Nexus is approaching, they need to fire a torpedo or something. So Kirk is down there.
Right. They're like, we don't have torpedoes, but Scotty's like, you could turn this garbage can into a torpedo or some shit like that.
Yeah, so like Kirk ad hocs a torpedo together.
Well, first, Alan Ruck is going to do it. He's like, you know what? You take the bridge. And Kirk like sits down and he has a moment where he's like happy to be in the seat again. But then he's like,
no.
Like, he's like, this is wrong. You have to stay
on your Enterprise.
I'll go and do it. And then that's what gets him killed.
Killed? Kind of, yeah, like they assume he's killed. Like,
well,
the Nexus hits the bottom of the ship.
Much like with Wrath of Khan, with Spock's death, people knew Kirk was going to die in this. I don't know if it was leaked on purpose. So again, much like Spock in the beginning of that movie, there's a fake out.
Right.
Like I remember seeing it. This is the first Star Trek movie I saw in a theater. I was 11. And I remember seeing it with people and people being like, was that it? That's how he dies? This is it? He dies in the first scene and that's it? But they actually do a cool thing though, because like wherever he is in the ship, like literally the wall comes out.
Yeah.
And then they show the ship from the outside and you see like their figures, you see them in it, which is like a rare moment of scale that you don't normally get.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to 70 something, almost 80 years later.
Yeah. But kind of, because now they're on, it's just the holodeck, but they're on.
We're like playing a boat. Pirates again.
They're playing pirates.
As we
which is a nice little scene, like fake out scene in and of itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like Worf is getting promoted to like Lieutenant Commander Worf.
Yeah.
So they do like a ceremonial, like, oh, he's gonna walk the plank.
Yeah.
And they're having fun. They accidentally remove the plank. Worf falls in the water.
Yeah.
Data tries to be funny, which is a running theme in this movie.
Yes.
And then
to better or worse effects.
Yes. There are moments that it really works.
There are moments that it doesn't work. Yeah.
But then Picard gets a space phone call.
Yeah.
And you don't know the specifics, but like clearly something terrible is happening.
Because he's very angry at everyone.
He's very angry.
He's short with people.
Yeah. He leaves. And then now we get into basically like the meat of the movie.
Wait, can we talk about the holodeck for just a minute?
Yes.
I always felt like, how could this work? But I recently had an experience that made me feel like it could totally work. Right now, in the Staten Island Mall.
Okay.
The mall, we both live in Staten Island. There is a thing, there's a little kiosk called Virtual Roller Coaster.
Okay.
And it's a little, imagine like it looks like a little car.
Yeah.
And all this thing doesn't even move up and down. Like, all it does is shake. But you put on the VR headset. And you pick like one of five different choices for a roller coaster. And you're in the virtual world. And then the thing starts shaking. So it feels like a roller coaster. And then you're in it. And I swear to God. And I always feel this way whenever I do VR. My consciousness knows I'm not in it. But my eyes and ears, which are the key to your brain, right? Like it's the entry point. They are being fooled. Even if I know they're being fooled, they're being fooled. And I like my butthole clenched when we went down. And literally, it's not even one of those things that you see like on the Jersey Shore where like
it moves up and down
like Star Tours. It wasn't even doing it. It was literally just shaking. And I was like, I was in it. Afterwards, I felt nauseated. I was like, wow, that was a wild ride. Meanwhile, Jen just standing there looking at me like a fucking asshole. I'm the asshole, not her. So the point is the holodeck I think would work.
Could eventually. Well, I would love to. I gotta look up some videos on like would a holodeck really work.
Here's the thing about the holodeck that always bothers me though, which is like he'll be like, "Give me a door," right? And then like the door will appear, but it's like, so the door was always there. Like sometimes that physics bothers me. Like I know that like it'll make you feel a certain way, and it'll make you it fucks with your senses.
Well, the door is always there.
But why? Well, then why is it? So, like, if you walked far enough, you'd hit the wall.
I always assumed that the floor moves with you, almost like a, like a treadmill,
okay,
kind of thing.
So you would think you're walking forever,
right?
All right. And do people just use it to fuck?
Certainly in some aspects of Star Trek, like they, like in Deep Space Nine, the holodecks on Deep Space Nine are originally owned by the bar that's on Deep Space Nine. Yeah. And it's heavily implied that it's like very seedy
they
and
have
like
cum drains.
Yeah, basically it's just used for like pleasure.
Okay, fair enough.
Where it's like, oh, you take a load off. Why don't you go use one of my holo suites?
Take a load off. Am I right?
Yeah, boom,
boom. Rub a load out. We forgot to say this movie is written by Rick Berman, Ronald D. Moore, Brandon Braga.
Yeah, all writers and producers for the show.
And screenplay by Moore and Braga. And Ronald Moore also, he brought back
Battlestar Galactica,
right? Yeah. It's directed by David Carson, who's mostly a TV director. And apparently they wanted to just do this fast, so they hired a TV director.
And it shows.
Yeah, one of my criticisms is it shows.
I mean, obviously it looks better than a TV show.
Yeah.
Like, the cool thing about it, look, first contact is where, like, they take the training wheels off.
Yeah.
Like, that's not even if you're not a huge Star Trek fan, like, you know that's the one that, like, is the big time. Like, this looks like a movie.
Right.
They redid the sets, they new Enterprise, new suits, new everything.
Right. Are these the exact same sets from?
A lot of them are.
Right. But they're just
like new lighting, more dynamic.
More cinematic lighting.
So, like, in some respects, it doesn't look great because you're expecting, like, big movie production.
Yeah.
But it's like clearly the best these sets look.
Okay.
Because of the lighting.
Right. And they do destroy the ship that allows
them to. They do destroy at the end. Did you note, maybe you read about this in the trivia. It's one of the first things that will probably come up. But did you notice the weird bullshit with the uniforms?
No, I didn't. I read about it though. What? I don't understand what's going on with the uniforms.
So in Next Generation, the uniforms were, they looked one way, where it's like black collar all the way up to your neck.
Okay.
Then for DS9 and Voyager, they changed the uniforms slightly, where it's almost like a shirt and it's like a purple undershirt.
Uh-huh.
Like a bluish purple undershirt that goes up to the neck and you get the pips on the collar and everything.
Uh-huh.
They were going to make new movie uniforms for the Next Gen crew. But they scrapped them at the last second. So they ran out of uniforms and just, which I don't know how the fuck that happens.
Right.
So like half the crew for half the movie is wearing the Next Gen uniforms.
Uh-huh.
And then half the crew is wearing like the DS9 uniforms.
Wild.
And then like,
and the action figures had the,
had the ones they were going to use.
Right.
And like look up while I'm explaining this. Riker uniform generations.
Okay, I
will. Because one of the things that you may not have noticed, but now that I'm telling you, you'll never not notice it again, is because he was one of the ones that had to wear a DS9 uniform, it doesn't fit him. It's too big. So his sleeves are always rolled up. Like, Riker's sleeves are always rolled up, and you're always looking at, like, his undershirt.
Oh, wow, yeah. See, this is supposed to be a movie.
And, like, not only are half the people wearing the wrong uniforms, they, like, change uniforms at random. Like, Picard's wearing the Next Gen uniform for the first part of the movie, and then, like, out of nowhere, he starts wearing the DS9 uniforms. And it's like, why?
That's very weird.
Like, again, it's a little thing. It doesn't, like, ruin the movie or anything. But, like, Red Letter Media famously, like, did a whole rant on it.
I know. I can't help but, whenever I see the name Rick Berman,
Rick Berman. Yeah, or like, I guess we can get right into it. One of the next scenes in the movie is Picard crying at his space photo album.
We all hate Picard's space photo album.
Yeah, because when they did the movies, and this is a classic like TV to movie thing, the producers will sometimes add little touches to be like, well, we're in space, so we got to have space photos.
Right. Which so means just, like a hologram, weird like Marvel trading cards hologram around each photo.
Yeah, like they're still regular photos, right. But it's just like the border of the photo instead of being all white is like hologram.
Right.
Like I put 50 cents in a machine and got like a sticker.
Now it's a space photo.
Yeah. But Picard's crying and Troy comes in and it's actually a really good scene. That's the thing with this movie in a nutshell is that there's a lot of good scenes floating around in it.
Uh-huh.
But, like, when you put it all together, it really shows that like they did not need the Kirk stuff. Well, and that the last there's whole sections of this movie where it's like, I'm fine with where it's going.
Yeah.
But then like knowing that it's getting to that end in like the last 15, 20 minutes of the movie, that's really what kills the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because like the stuff with, like you were saying before, the themes of the movie and family, and we find out that Picard's brother and his wife and kid had died.
Renee.
And that was a big thing from the TV show. Like his brother who he had reconciled with.
And it echoes what Kirk said in the beginning about Sulu. Like, how do you have time to have a family?
Right.
Because he was like, my nephew Renee was the closest I thought I'd ever have to a kid. And now that he's dead, there'll be no more Picards. It's the end of my family.
Yeah. So like there's good stuff in this movie. It's just that
it feels a little bit like a TV episode though.
Yeah,
to me,
I could see that.
Like I said, this was the first Star Trek movie I saw in a theater, and I absolutely loved it when I saw it. And I have to say, when I saw it again today, and I have seen it a few times in the, you know, since 1994, but watching it today, it didn't work for me as well as I had remembered. And it's weird. First of all, it takes too long to get going. And I think it's because it has two beginnings. It has this Kirk stuff, and then it has the next gen stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know how to properly articulate it. It's like the stakes are off. Like the stakes are all over the place.
I think I know exactly what you're
like,
talking about.
The world's going to end, but then...
But it's really not.
Right. But like, wait, I had a good... I wrote down some of the weird... the stars are exploding, and then Picard is trying to crawl through rocks. The Enterprise crashes violently onto a planet, and then Picard has a terrible, lackluster fist fight.
That's what I'm saying. It's the last 20 minutes of this movie kind of betray the rest of it.
The end feels very cheap, very sparse. I mean, he goes to Kirk to help him. All he needs is, like, well, he's like, I need help. Well, and I know we're skipping ahead, but like anybody could do that help. Why do you need the best captain in history to help you punch a guy?
Well, again, it sours the rest of the movie because before you get to all of that, you've got Lursa and Bator show up.
Those are the two
female Klingons.
Right. So as not someone who hasn't watched Next Gen, these are pre-established characters that
they're
we know.
Pre-established characters. But you also like could have had them be different Klingons, like didn't really just like fan service kind of thing. Where they put Geordi and they use his visor to get intel.
Now let me ask you a question, and I don't mean to sound crude. Is the thing with them like these are babe Klingons, or am I just gross?
No, you're not gross.
Because
they have a chest plate that like really shows off their tits.
Their boobs are really out there. And they're kind of more fun than the normal Klingons.
Yeah.
They seem like the
Doubleman
twin.
I was going to say, this is a bad way to play it, but they're like Valley Girl Klingons.
Yeah, yeah. So I was like, what are we doing here with these sexy Klingons? they feel like real like 80s and 90s babes.
Yeah.
But then they die in this, so that's the end for them.
Good for them.
Yeah, it seems a little convoluted. When we talked about Star Trek V, how sometimes they just throw Klingons into things.
This one they definitely just threw.
Yeah, because I don't, like, Soren being involved with them.
Doesn't really make much sense. Like, Soren has, like, a passing interest in Geordi's visor, which doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
But again, like, all that stuff could have gone somewhere.
Right.
Like, before you hit that last 20 minutes, I feel like things are really rocking and rolling. Like, a plot is being formed. Picard is slowly discovering what's going on with Soren. The data stuff is hit or miss, but there is some interesting stuff there.
Yeah.
Like, when they go to the other ship and, like, Soren, like, comes after him.
Yeah,
With his emotions. Day gets his emotions.
And is that from the show, too?
That is from the show.
Because it's just there. Like, it's not introduced. Like,
that's in the show. Like, he gets an emotion chip, but he chooses not to put it in his brain.
Okay. And in this movie, he's like, I've been thinking about doing it.
Yeah. And some fans get upset because the chip looks different in the movie.
Okay.
But that's like, come on, guys. Like, we got to draw the line somewhere. Like,
right.
I don't care how big this fucking chip is.
right.
So, like, there's all that going on. Then there's, like, the core thing of Picard trying to figure out what's going on with Dr. Sauron.
Yeah.
Who's constantly trying to, like, get access to shit.
I don't know how I like him as a villain.
I am right there with you. And, again, I think had he been allowed to be more, had the stakes been higher in the last 20, so let's just jump right to it.
Sure.
So, basically, the middle of the movie, stuff is going on. It's all, I think it's all very interesting,
mm-hmm.
but it's all stuff that needs to be paid off.
Sure.
So here we come, the last 20 minutes of the movie, Picard gets thrown in the Nexus. And this is supposed to be when, like, the whole thing changes.
Right.
So he gets thrown in the Nexus.
We should set up a little bit. So the whole thing with Sauron is he lost
his family.
Yeah, because Borgs came and killed his family. And he had been in the Nexus and he wants to get back into it.
Yeah, and the Nexus is basically like, it's imaginary really wonderland.
Guinan describes it as like being inside joy.
Pure joy, yeah.
I do like that it's mysterious, though I do wish I had a little more of explanation of what it is. Like, why is it? But anyway, he wants to go back to the Nexus. See, here's the thing. This would make him a better villain. Since what he wants is basically small stakes, right? I mean, it will kill millions of people because he has to destroy a star to get himself back in. But if you want to make him less mustache twirly,
mm-hmm.
make him sympathetic.
Right. Show his family getting destroyed by the Borg.
Show why he so badly wants to get back into this fantasy world.
Right, we never see it.
Right.
We just know that he wants to get back there. Like,
right.
We know because we paid attention to the movie that his family was killed, but you could very easily have watched this movie and not picked up on that.
Right, exactly. Like, to me, the thing that's the most interesting about the movie is the concept of the Nexus.
Right, which, again, interesting stuff going on in the movie. And then you get to the last 20 minutes, and Picard goes into the Nexus, and we see a nice scene where it's Christmas movie.
It's not just a Christmas. It's a Victorian Christmas. For some reason, he's in Charles Dickens' Victorian. He has Victorian children. I don't understand.
And this is supposed to be like, oh, the family he never had. Like,
right.
So he's there. He's got his family.
They're like, Papa.
Yeah, Papa, let's go get some figgy pudding, Papa.
It's like, very weird that he, I don't know why they're Victorian. But
but so he's there, and then he's like he's loving it. And
I think it's good looking. It's beautiful. It is good looking. The Christmas of it is very beautiful.
But then Guinan shows up and cock blocks his whole dream.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, Picard, here's what the Nexus is. You're in it right now. Here's what you can do. Here's what you probably should do. And instead of being like, great, let's go back 5 days to when Sauron jumps on our ship.
Right.
And now that I know what he's going to do, we're going to have Worf and all of our security ambush him.
Right.
And just shut the whole thing down right away.
Right. First of all,
you could do anything. She tells him you could do anything you want right
which,
now.
By the way, is so, like, so vague. Like, how he gets from where he is to where Kirk is, who knows? How him and Kirk get out of it, who the fuck knows?
Right.
Like where do they enter? Like, can they really go anywhere in fucking time just by thinking it?
Just, like, your mind does it?
Yeah. And but, like you said, of course, why not go earlier? Why go to just a few minutes before?
Right. He's like, well, now I can go back to 5 minutes ago and punch Sauron off a bridge.
Right.
But I can't do it alone. First, he the most egregious thing. First, he suggests, Guinan, you must come back with me.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, so Whoopi Goldberg was going to help you punch Sauron off this bridge?
But she's like, I'm not really her. I'm an echo of her.
I'm an echo.
Basically,
of her.
Part of you stays in the Nexus. Part of your being stays in the Nexus.
Yeah.
But so, here's the thing, when she's talking to her earlier about it, right, she says, be careful, don't get into it because you'll never want to leave, nothing else will matter to you, which is a setup that doesn't pay off because
he seems pretty quick to be able to leave.
Right, if the movie had more time to breathe, right, I would have liked her trying to get him to leave and him being
that was
like
the middle of the movie.
Right. And him being like, no, I've got everything I want. This is perfect. Or him really believing it. Like when we meet Kirk, he believes he is where he is.
Yeah.
Right? So it's, but there's a lot of problems. Even Kirk, it's like, that's not really a happy memory that he's in. Anyway, I've got problems. But
yeah, yeah, like, let's start, yeah.
We can deconstruct everything, because a lot of the ideas are just,
it's like very vague.
It's a good idea that I feel like they don't really dig into.
Yeah, so like, Guinan tells him, okay, you can go anywhere, and like we said, Picard's like, great, I'll go back 5 minutes.
Right.
But I need someone to come with me. So I've got the thought in my head where who better to defeat Sauron than James T. Kirk?
Right. If all you need is somebody to distract him, you got Renee right there. Be like, hey, kids, come with me.
Yeah.
All five of you pretend not real imaginary kids. I need you to come with me because we're going to fucking do something.
Yeah.
Or get anybody. Why do you need the best captain? Like,
just to punch a guy off a bridge.
Yeah. It's not like, oh, I need him to help me maneuver. I need him to help
again,
me.
Again, that's the thing people wanted, where like it should have been, oh, great, I need to, like, I don't know how they would get to this point.
Get him on the ship somehow. Yeah,
like, get him on a ship somehow and then have both captains on the bridge at the same time.
Right. Doing captain shit.
Yeah, doing captain stuff.
Not punching people. And so, that's one of the big, and people have talked about this before, but one of the big failures of the movie is the blocking and the action. And that, I mean, like, the ship action is good, but like the actual, like, punching and fighting, it all is too slow. It all looks real bad. It's poorly, it just looks like old men hitting each other, and it sucks.
Yeah. Well, so he goes back to James Kirk, who's in like his ranch house.
Right.
Somewhere in the Nexus. And he's like, well, why would I leave this? Like, this is very nice.
Right.
He's got a wife now for some reason.
He has a girlfriend that he, Antonia, who we've never heard about before.
Right.
And he's like, this is the morning that I tell her I'm going back to Starfleet, which means this is not a good memory. So why is he in this?
I don't know. But they don't get into it.
But then when Picard is like trying to get him to leave the Nexus, he's like, no, I'm going to do everything right this time. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to tell her I want to marry her. I'm not going to go back to Starfleet. And then he goes in there, and then there he's in his like uncle's stables. Because Wim Shatner loves horses. So he's like, you got to put my horsey in the movie. So he convinces them
to go back, and then they ride horses.
Because you fucking got to.
And then they go to Viridian 3.
So there's a few things here. One, if the trivia is to be believed, it was supposed to be Carol Marcus, not this Antonia. But for some reason, Paramount said no to that, and I don't know why.
I don't know why either.
Because we've never heard a fucking word about this Antonia.
We don't even see her. She's like a silhouette in like one
shot.
Right,
exactly. There is probably, I don't know, one of the best scenes in the movie is when they decide to go, when he decides to help him, Kirk and him are on horses and they're talking, and he's like, so you're the captain of the Enterprise. He's like, so what, like, and they're really talking like man to man. And he's like, are you close to retirement? And he's like, don't let them make you retire. Don't do anything. Because if you stay on that ship, because if you're the captain of the Enterprise, you can make a difference, which is really great. Interesting scene and interesting acting on its own. But in the context of the movie, it seems counter to what the fucking point is.
Yeah.
Shouldn't Kirk be saying, you know what? You're young. Don't do like me. Fucking forget the ship. Go get a wife. Go get a family. Right. Don't make the same mistake I did. It seems, given the context of the story we're in, it doesn't seem to make any sense that he would double down and tell him, no, whatever you do, stay as the fucking captain of the Enterprise and die alone.
Well, it doesn't matter because he won't be around much longer anyway.
Right.
So they go back to Sauron and they're like, ah, see, it's not just me now. It's me and this older man.
Yeah, me. I brought my fat uncle. And he's like, all right, okay.
And so then they get him on a bridge, and they beat him, but somehow in the process, Kirk falls off the bridge, and some people say they really like his last lines in this depth scene.
I like it, except for the very last words, the oh my,
oh my,
the oh my,
oh dear, or whatever he says.
Which he says like, oh, that was Kirk. He was really going where no man has gone before. That was him seeing the great beyond. And it's like, okay, well, to me, watching it, it's just you saying something stupid. I do, I do like what he says beforehand. Where he's like, I do anything, you know, how can I forget. He says like, thank you. Picard says thank you. And he says something like, you know, anything for the captain of the Enterprise.
Yeah. And then they just throw him under some rocks.
You know, it was a reshoot.
Yeah, because they originally shot him in the back. Yeah, and test audiences shoots him the back. Like, don't like that.
Yeah. I guess I kind of like the bridge thing because, like,
I don't like any of it.
Because I know. He knows that he's going to die, though, because it's like a bridge that's already falling down, and right. they need to get the remote control that make that.
Maybe get the RC control.
To make the thing, the rocket that's going to destroy the sun.
Picard, this fucking peewee looking rocket.
Again, stakes. Picard needs to see it to deprogram it. So he needs, so, but it's cloaked. So you need, Kirk needs to get the remote to press the button so it's not cloaked. Yeah. Again, stakes. So Kirk is like, okay, don't worry. You go to that. I'll do this. At one point he says, call me Jim. I guess it's fun.
Yeah.
And he goes, he jumps to get the clicker, and then he clicks it and then falls and dies.
Yeah. And then he bury him under some rocks.
He buries him under some rocks.
What do you
rocks.
Do after that? Are you like, okay, here's the rocks I buried him under. Beam him up.
Yeah, beam up the body.
And now we know, thanks to Picard season 3, they did beam him up.
Oh, they did? Okay.
Because there's a scene where they basically go in Picard Season 3 to, like, their version of Area 51 in space.
Sure.
And there's, like, a little comm panel, and it shows, they're like, oh, what's in here? And on the screen, it shows, like, a diagram of, like, Kirk's body.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I don't know why they're keeping him. Maybe they're going to clone him? I don't know.
There was a Star Trek book where he came back.
Oh, you bet.
That was quote-unquote written by William Shatner.
Yeah, written by...
There's a lot of books so-called written by William Shatner.
Yeah, which there's are a lot of Shatnerverse books.
He had his own sci-fi series. I forget what it was called. Tech Wars or something
Tech
like
Wars,
that?
Tech Wars, I think it
which,
was.
Which, again, it was all ghostwritten by someone else.
Yeah.
But had his name on it.
And that's kind of the end of the movie.
Here's a piece
of... Well, no, the we are leaving out one cool part of it.
Sure.
Where the action back on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Where they crash the ship. And, like, that's a genuinely cool... Because that was a real model that they really crashed.
Right. And I guess... Now, are they really just doing this because they want a new set?
They want a new set.
Okay. Because it feels like...
It really felt that way.
It felt like a thing that should have happened in the series finale of the show, not in the first movie.
Right.
Because it seems like it kind of comes out of nowhere. Like, they're like, oh, all of a sudden there's a problem with the warp core. And they're like, yeah, we're fucked. There's no way to fix this.
Right.
Which is Star Trek, there's always a way to fix it, right? Geordi's like, nah, there's no way to fix this. We're fucked. Let's separate
the sauces section.
Yeah, which is cool. Yeah, and you have Riker in command there. And yeah, There's two.
He has Troy take the helm, which is real weird.
Do you think the movie would be better without Kirk at all?
I think it would have been better if they just really stuck to their guns and were like, hey, this is the next gen movie. No Kirk.
Right. And then that frees up time to, like, spend more time in the Nexus. Let's see what other people do the Nexus versions.
Like, if they didn't have the edict to connect the two generations, maybe they don't even do the Nexus plot.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question. I've only seen a handful of episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation. One of the things that people say is that in the Next Generation films, Picard, the characterization of Picard is not in line with who he is in the
like
show.
More like a man of action.
How do you feel about it?
I think there's definitely truth to that. But I do think it's a little overblown.
Okay.
Because in Generations, I think he's pretty much the same Picard as on the show.
Okay.
It's just the choices he makes in this movie it's not well written.
In the show, does he ever have, like, punch fights, like fisticuffs?
Not really. He usually tries, and there are a couple episodes where, like, there's definitely set up for it.
Yeah.
But he usually tries to figure out, like, a clever way, like, oh, there's a,
he seems to try
a
that
panel where I'm going to reroute something to this thing and do that.
When he first beams down to the planet, he seems to, like, his plan is, like, he's going to convince Soren. But again, Soren is such a one-dimensional character that, like, it doesn't work at all. So, like, he's like, oh, well, that's not going to work. Let me throw rocks to see if there's a place I could get in through the shield.
Well, this may also be a conversation that will come up in the next movie as well. Because that's the one where people go, like, and I think the majority of people love First Contact. but there are like a small minority of fans that do sort of beat the drum of, oh, well, this is movie Picard in this movie,
mm-hmm.
because he's much, that one, he's like shooting guns, yeah, and like fucking beating up Borg. But it worked, they make it work in that movie because they play off of the fact that he was once assimilated. So he's got that like inside link to the Borg, where it's like he knows, like, oh shit, like, I, like, we cannot play around with these people.
Right.
Like, we need to fucking take action. If we don't take action, and like, it blinds him. And by the end of that movie, like, he learns that he shouldn't be that way.
But, you know, because of the fact that he's struck by the death of his, like, only family, I feel like for, like, too long in this movie, he's kind of a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Again, I think there's a lot of interesting stuff in this movie, and it's all kind of betrayed by this edict that they needed to bridge the gap between these two franchises.
I think there were other things that don't work. I think they thought the stuff with Data was just
rib
cracking hilarious.
Yeah, they were like happy as a pig and shit with all this Data stuff that they were.
Yeah, oh, he's
gonna
sing a little song.
He's gonna say, "Oh shit."
He's gonna cuss. And it's like, this stuff's interesting, but it's more interesting like when he's scared. It's more interesting when like he's so like scared he can't do anything. Like when he's like happy and they're like, it's like Tobey Maguire's fucking Venom.
Dancing around?
Yeah, it's like, come on. It's like, this is a bit much.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Spiner wanted to do more as an actor.
Oh, I'm sure. Especially if these movies in general, I get the sense that Brett Spiner was like, oh, well, people love Data. We should put more Data in these movies.
So as a TNG fan, is there anything that you wish had been in the first film of this crew's, you know, tenure that isn't in there?
I would say it's hard to say because, again, like the movie I would have wanted would probably have been First Contact.
Mm-hmm. What point does Wesley leave? Does he leave the show at some point?
He left in like the fourth season.
Okay.
Like early in the fourth season, he goes to Starfleet. And then like he shows up sporadically after that.
Okay. Because he's not in the movie. Are there any other characters in the show that aren't in the movie? Or that you would like?
I would like? No, I mean, all you really needed was the regular cast.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a big villain. Like, again, like, they tried to do something that I was not on board with for this movie,
mm-hmm.
in bridging the gap. And I think First Contact was the movie that most of us were waiting for. Where it's like, here's a new set, big movie budget.
Feels like a big movie.
We're bringing back the Borg. Like, if we had to pick one villain to bring back for the movies, like, we got the Borg. We've got a ton of, like, next episode, there's a ton of fan service to go over, but most, if not all of it, I would say, is not intrusive. It's not the type of fan service where it's like, well, what is this? I haven't watched the show, so I didn't. It's all just like, oh, well, if you watch the show, like, it's cool that they brought this person in.
Okay.
Like, there's a scene in First Contact where, to get Worf back on the ship, because he was at DS9 by this point, he's flying the Defiant, and he's like, which is a little ship, and he's fighting the Borg, and his ship gets wrecked, so they beam him aboard the Enterprise. And if you didn't know that Worf was off on DS9 and that the Defiant was like the main cruiser battleship from that show, you wouldn't need to, because you'd just be like, oh, Worf's commanding a ship,
right.
And then they beam him aboard, and that's how he gets on this ship.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, and they find a way to get him in all these next-gen movies, right?
Well, yeah, with increasingly implausible means. Like, again, First Contact makes sense. He's in a battle with the Borg. They sent the Defiant out with him. Okay, great. Now he's on board. Insurrection, he's just, like, on the ship I don't know why. I don't think they give a real reason. He's just there.
I've never seen Insurrection or Nemesis at all.
Well, Nemesis, he's there hanging out because of Riker and Troy's wedding.
Okay.
So he's there because of that. Even though, like, they're having him work tactical still, so it's like, okay, maybe he is back full-time.
Interesting.
He also did a weird thing in Nemesis where, keep this like in your back pocket for when you watch it, because I didn't know it until a couple years ago, and then it's one of those things, again, you know it, and now you're going to look for it or hear it. To make him sound more menacing in Nemesis, for some reason, they like pitch shifted Worf's voice down like slightly.
Why would they do that?
I don't know.
After like years of series, and that's very odd. Was there, let me ask you, among the fans community, or mm-hmm. or even like amongst the cast and crew, was there any feeling after Nemesis of like, okay, now it's a DS9 movie, now we're doing our War Voyager movie?
I don't think that was ever on the table.
That
for
was
those
never
guys.
On the table.
No, I think the DS9 people probably hoped at one point that they would get like.
It seems like a pathway had been made. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because these movies, like we said, started. Generations comes out right after the end of the Next Generation show.
Yeah, and especially like DS9 fans got like really shortchanged because the whole thing with DS9, for people who don't know, is like halfway through the series, it becomes all about this big war of this group called the Dominion.
Uh-huh.
So, and it's like full scale, like all the Federation in the Alpha Quadrant versus like these Dominion forces. Like, we're talking millions of people dying.
Mm.
The whole Federation, like, they bomb Starfleet headquarters on Earth. Like, it's a really important thing in like the history of this fake universe.
Right.
So then, like, the next-gen movies come out, and, like, Insurrection probably should have been the one that was like, okay, like, we're going to recognize that there's, like, a big thing going on and get involved in this Dominion War. But it always felt like the next-gen crew was, like, off doing their own thing while everyone else was dealing with this universe-shattering war.
So it's weird that they didn't tie it in more.
It is weird that they didn't tie it in more.
Does it affect Voyager?
No, because Voyager takes place in the Delta Quadrant. So the thing with Voyager is the whole conceit of the show is it's about a new ship that's launched called the Starship Voyager. And they get sucked into a wormhole and through in the pilot episode basically get thrown 70 years away into the Delta Quadrant, which has not been explored by Starfleet.
Okay.
So they've got... So they're 70 years away and they got to find a way home.
So they're lost in space.
They're lost in space and they're trying to get back home. They're trying to make alliances. Like they meet new races, new people.
Interesting. Okay.
And then, yeah, so like they're away during all of this.
Isn't Janeway in one of the later movies?
She has a cameo in Nemesis where Picard gets a call from one of the admirals and it's, oh, it's Admiral Janeway. And like she gives him the mission to like go take out Tom Hardy.
Interesting. Tom Hardy, yeah.
Yeah, young Tom Hardy.
Oh gosh. This is so you think I was going to ask you to rank them, but we'll do that eventually, but you do think First Contact's the last one of this series that I watched, and I do like First Contact a lot.
I think First Contact is everything most people wanted from a Next Generation movie.
Yeah.
Like, you really could not... I can't think of a single thing that you could have, like, asked for that they didn't give you.
Okay.
I'm sure there's some fans that would disagree, but I think, like, even at the time, people were just, like very gung-ho, like, yeah, this is exactly what we wanted.
And it's a big... Like, it covers a big moment in all of Star Trek history.
Yeah, like it's a big Borg story... And it even, like, gives you a little bit of, like, new lore because there's the whole thing about them, like, going back in time
to
make sure that the first first contact happens between Earth and the Vulcans.
Did you see the Lower Decks where they go to, like, the First Contact, like, amusement park?
Yes.
And it's, like, and they actually got fucking, what's his name, Cromwell?
James Cromwell.
To do the voice of Zefford Cochran, and he's, like, animatronic.
There's an episode of Enterprise in their fourth season. It's a two-parter where they do a mirror universe story, which those are always fun.
Yeah.
And it starts out with an alternate version of First Contact where they use the same footage of like the end of First Contact, where like the Vulcan ship comes down,
yeah,
like the Vulcan comes down, like gives them the Vulcan salute,
yeah,
and you see Zefram Cochrane like when in the movie, like he's like hesitant because he doesn't know what the salute means, so he yes. like just gives them like a one of these like handshakes,
yeah.
Instead of doing that, you see his hand like go into his pocket and he's about to do a handshake and he pulls out a gun. Uh-huh. And he shoots the Vulcan, and then like they ransack and like take over the Vulcan ship.
That's fun.
And that's what leads to like the Confederation or whatever it is. Like
interesting. I've seen the only thing of Enterprise I've seen is like the last scene.
Oh,
of
that
the
last awful episode. Last episode.
Right, the last scene
just on the holodeck.
Right. It's another series.
Yeah.
Well, Vin, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for coming and talking about Star Trek once again.
Yeah.
Where can the people find you? They're clamoring for more Vin Forte.
They're clamoring.
They're like, we need more Vin Forte.
Yeah. Well, if you do want that for whatever reason, go to Twitter, twitter.com/mightyvin.
Is that anything like X?
I think it is.
Okay.
Don't go to X videos though. You're not gonna find me there.
No.
Not that you know of. Go to. Instagram at VinForteNYC
mm-hmm.
over there. Wrestle Rap is one of the podcasts I host. Oddball is the other podcast that's like weird sports related stuff. And then VinForte.substack.com. There's actually an article I just posted about Star Trek and The Rock up over there.
Fantastic. Vin, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah.
This is Pop Culture Man Children. We come out every Wednesday, no matter what. We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.